everyone who's involved is involved from the initiation to the implementation to the evaluation, and no one is reporting to anyone else. And so communication is created, moved forward, understood, evaluated, and shared almost instantly, and you have so many people who can help you, and you know how to go to them, but it's never up. It's always across and to other members of the team. I think that's a very different way to think about communication.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we have a request. As always, we're looking for articles in business journals or journals on business or organizational conduct and design. But sorry, we do not accept articles on government policies or politics or issues of the day. We need you to send us a published article that we can respond to and that others can also examine alongside us so we can look at the opinion of the authors in the article. Offering only a subject does not really work for us, and we don't give a first opinion, only second opinions. Then, we can use our living systems frameworks with a critical eye and offer a regenerative and developmental alternative. So if you have any of these, please send them to carol@carolsanford.com. As we take your requests very seriously, and if we feel like we have something new to offer as a second opinion that's not been covered before, we'll take it on. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn how to join a multi-organization business team or change agent community, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Zach.
So our topic today, leaders and leadership. Maybe the most popular subject for training and development, I think. I actually studied this as a graduate student getting my MBA and kind of have evolved my own ideas about it many times. So I think for today, it's a pretty good subject, and it's one that gets brought up a lot in business journals. And I think it's actually even more relevant now that I own a company. But Carol, why are we taking on this subject today in particular?
Well, for this week, we got an article from a young man who lives in Bolivia, and he asked to remain anonymous, and so I said, fine. His name is Rafael, and I'm not even sure how to spell it, that's a long story. His given name is Rafael, and he's working on bringing the idea of regeneration into his own consulting work. But from the article he sent, he was hoping that this was more in line with how we thought. But I could see that he was still thinking of leadership in hierarchical terms from the article he sent. But, you know, I felt like it'd be good for giving an opinion. So I have a question for you, given that you're not only now working with me, reading and doing all this kind of stuff in the broader world, but you have Super Alloy, which is doing the kind of work you have to do that puts you in a different kind of leadership role. Why do you think leaders default to this idea of we're looking for somebody who's a better leader, more benevolent, kinder, gentler? What do you think drives all that? You know, why do people have trouble dropping out this idea we need external management and we need to train the top manager to be, quote, better leaders? Where does that come from?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we've touched on it a little bit in the past, but, you know, I feel like despite us still dragging a lot forward from kind of the industrial era, right, and the kind of like arrest disorder paradigm, which is all, as we've talked about before, externally determining people's work. Really, since the 1960s, we've seen quite a reaction to this with the humanist paradigm. And so the humanists at their core hope to, really, as the name implies, work towards having humans do good in the world. And really, at the end of the day, that just needs to be shown to them, right, through kindness or a positive approach, and might even be able to be trained into them. But as I'm sure you can kind of hear from what I'm saying here, I'm not too keen on the effects of this paradigm, because it still creates work environments in humans without some of the kind of core capabilities that we talk about a lot on the pod, which is internal locus of control, personal agency, and external considering. But before I run too far forward here, I just want to say that so the article for today, back to HBR, is from this gentleman, Raphael, and it was published in March 15th of 2016. And it was a study that reported the top 10 leadership competencies chosen by a global set of leaders through a big survey process. And so the article is titled "The Most Important Leadership Competencies According to Leaders Around the World" by Sunny Giles. So, Carol, back to you, actually. So what riled you up so much about this one that you wanted to put on the docket?
Well, as I read through it, I could feel literally the hair on the back of my neck standing out because I understand how people want to have something better than what they've got. And I think part of the reason this is bigger every year is that as people do sustainability, fair trade, all the things about how to change things out in the world, they notice that internally it doesn't feel like a great place to work. And even though they may have missions that are doing good now in the world, they don't feel like it's changing inside. And I'm sorry to see it go toward the do good, because there are so many assumptions built in that have to do with, particularly, they don't look at that the hierarchy itself, with the job titles and the thought that leadership is a management role, it's somewhere in the hierarchy. And it still has its whole idea you mentioned about it being all external. And so if I'm going to stay with the assumption that management and leading is a set of people that's external, then I got to have it be good. And so that assumption, and that the world is kind of fixed in terms of hierarchies, then we have to keep designating certain kind of leaders rather than, I mean, I want us to switch the idea that leader isn't always a role, but leadership is a process that everyone is able to. And in fact, I believe they do take it on over time under different circumstances. So I want to look at that. And I wanted to take these 10 leadership competencies and switch the position from external to internal, from having to be leaders of other people to being leaders of ourselves and leaders of groups, but it's not fixed. So, Zach, I think if we could take these, maybe we can't do all of them because 10's a lot, but pick maybe the top three or four you believe really matter, and give us a story about it. What does it mean from your life experience? If you look at what it looks like in practice, why it's still there, maybe we can see more of that, and your specific concern about it undermining, I think, what people really aspire to.
For sure. Let's go. So everyone should be reading along with the article just so we can make sure that everyone sees the rest of these. But Let me pick number three, and then I'll kind of say what it is here. So the third characteristic that they mention is leaders enable some level of self-organizing by providing goals and objectives with loose guidelines for direction. Okay, so what do I think about number three here? So I think it's interesting how these podcasts are always so timely, but recently I've been in this conversation with one of my staff who's know nothing but the kind of work environment that number three is outlining here for his whole career. And what I notice is that he really struggles pretty mightily with sourcing his own direction and capacity for self-management. And as a result of that, I catch myself falling into this mode where I'm actively managing him, because that's like what he's looking for, right? He's looking for me to give him direction. And so as I'm catching myself doing this, I know this is detrimental to he and I and our relationship and the company and our customers. But the problem is he doesn't know necessarily right, you know, right out the gate how to build his own internal sense of direction and how to organize and order his work. And so as a result, he'll miss out on work that needs to happen, say at like a vital level for a client, and will default instead to kind of working on an automatic or sensitive level of work. And that I see this is not really that helpful without a developmental process for us all to work on a framework together, to work with him over time so that he can see it. And so I catch myself working in a more directive way because I think it's going to be faster and easier. And it is, right? This is kind of what we're talking about. Like, this stuff exists because it's easy to do and it seems like the obvious thing to do in a lot of cases. But it's satisficing, right? In the beginning, it works, but there's nothing more fundamental that's getting worked on. And so we end up retreading the same ground over and over again, and things get missed. And instead, we're not working as fundamentally as we could in our thinking capacity together. So when I, as a business leader, enact this kind of work externally directed, right, this externally directed work over and over again, it short-circuits any possibility of this person becoming self-managing and self-directed because I'm doing the thinking for him. And this kind of approach exists because we as leaders default to seeing people as lower than us or underneath us and not capable of doing the same level of thinking that we are. And this is the effect of putting people in a hierarchy. No one is required to think like a leader, and therefore they all shirk the opportunity to generate personal agency towards customers, stakeholders, and the contributors to a given system. But Carol, what do you think? What are your thoughts? And how do you see this from a living systems lens?
Well, I never worked inside of a big corporation as an employee, but I've been inside of over 100 of them in my lifetime. And when I start, unless it's a new startup, there's always what you just described present. There's a hierarchy. People delegate, and then they rank and rate and approve whether or not people are working on what they gave them. So you pointed out, I think, the major thing, you have to shift kind of how you're organized to do work, not in a hierarchy. Now, I want to be quick to point out, we've said this many times on here, we don't flatten hierarchies. We don't overnight do something like get rid of supervisors, turn everything over to employees, and then they're doing the same work without anybody delegating or evaluating them. Instead, we leave all that in place for a very long time until they're ready to move it. But we organize work for deciding what we're going to do against the strategy the company is doing in general in external teams. So right now, the reason people have to do what you just described with your new employee is they're organized usually around functional groups. The work we're going to do, the filming, the designing, the post-production, whatever you're doing, that's the doing. And then you have, because these are all broken up into a variety of different functional groups, they can't possibly be self-managing against something that is really about the whole of the business. So the first thing we do is everyone becomes a member of an externally organized team. 100%. I don't care if you are in the janitorial group or receptionist or the CEO of the company. You become a part of a team that's wrapped around external stakeholders. And usually, although there are a few others, they're wrapped around what we call buyer nodes. Now, just think mentally. If you could think about the delegation is coming from a market customer or consumer or distributor, and you were finding out what they needed, and they can't tell you what they need, but your job is to figure out what they need, and you're in a team of people that's working around a group of people who are similar in their values and their pursuits, not their demographics. And you're sitting and having conversations regularly, at least monthly, about the team you're on with other team members. So let me give you an example. In Seventh Generation, each of the groups I'm going to mention right now met at least monthly, and they were getting developmental work from me. They were applying it to one of these particular external groups, Natural Parent. Yeah, we called it that. Deep Green Families, the New Eco-Conscious Buyer. And then they had a whole set that was around distributors, like Natural Distributors, Whole Foods. Now, notice all of those are values-based buyers and users. And our job is to figure out what they need. Now, you don't turn and go to you and ask you to go find out all that, or worse, to pay people to do research and come tell you. You directly connect people, and you connect them with what the essence of that group is. And you help their lives become amazing, and you learn to measure for the company what that group measures. What do natural parents measure for their success? What are their performance indices? What do the natural distributor measure? That's a whole different world, because there's no external evaluation of you. It's the entire team working together to come up with what it is that buyer knows and their essence needs to become where they're going. So I think this is like flip on his head. Give me another one. You go. You do one of these others and keep standing them on their head.
Okay, great. So, yeah, let's pick the next one. Let's do number four, actually. So number four is from these leadership competencies is leaders provide clear communication and expectations. So I'm not entirely sure why they think just leaders need to aspire to clear communication with this
right.
one. But let's set that aside for a second. So expectations are kind of similar to the last competency, all about externally determining work for someone else. So when I set up expectations for a project, I'm doing the thinking for our crew. And one of the aspects of our business, for example, right, is that we rent motion capture suits. So when I started, surprise, surprise, I had no idea how to run a rental business. So I had to work with my studio manager. He and I had to do a lot of thinking together about how to work with our customers to understand their process when they take on working with our suits for their project. And that process started as kind of an arm's length transaction, right? How long, how much money, get the shipping addresses, make sure everything gets there on time, blah, blah, blah. And this ended up getting us back disorganized, damaged suits with no care put into their use. And yeah, it was a pretty big disaster. But over time, he and I have discovered together by working with these clients how to approach this process of education so that everything from the sales process to getting the suit safely to them and back is about educating people on motion capture for the project, the idea of motion capture, the art of motion capture. And along the way, my studio manager has developed a whole aspect and many aspects of this process, which he now engages me in. But had I set those expectations, we never would have had any of this kind of detail tracking, the management systems we have now, and the process that we have now. It all would have come from me in an incomplete way and just told him what to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's clear to everyone who's listening that we're stuck back again because we have the external management theory of all the behavioral theory. It's a point of book number 7, why no one can think for themselves anymore, is because we have been told and we believe that someone else knows the answers and gets them for us. So if you go back to the idea of communication in a living system developmental organization, communication doesn't even mean the same thing. It's not a one-way street flowing downhill with whatever is not working, flowing uphill and getting resolved. It is a community of people working to create something. So let me describe how that would work with the 7th generation team. So you think about those fire buyer notes I gave you, natural parent, natural pet parent, the deep greens, the new eco folks, and a few others who were working with distributors. They're meeting monthly in a developmental session. Now, you might think of this as a replacement for training, because training is based on the idea that somebody else decides what needs to be done, how it needs to be done, how to get evaluated, and then you train people on that. In this case, you're all in a monthly meeting where you have at your table your set of people from the market, we call them market field team, where the people who are organized around one of those groups. So zoom in and you can see the natural parent team with a group sitting around. Instead of someone communicating them from the front of the room, like an all hands meeting, where you're told everything's going on up to date, people share, a lot of communication goes on at one time and they think it's great because everybody's in the room together. We have everybody in the room, but we have them in natural work teams. And as they're learning a new way to think, they're applying it at that moment to a creative process. So the process means this team and ultimately individuals within it are organizing around thinking about the natural parent and what it is that needs to be initiated given what's going on with the natural parent's life and what's happening in the world around them. We would be today thinking about the inflation and how it's affecting parents. We'd be thinking about what we could do inside seventh generation. They would be initiating, not waiting to be communicated to, but initiating the work they think they can do for their buyer. They would design a plan to implement, and people would be creating what that plan would look like. There would be a mix of people from across the organization, because that's how these teams are made up, so that the minute we, at the end of the meeting, a couple hours, sometimes a whole day, the plan is known and it's communicated directly, instantly to everybody in the organization because they go back to line, to sales, to customer service. And then there's a way they're constantly evaluating how well their plan is working, making changes in their current way of working, as well as the new ideas they have. And there's no hierarchy coming to communicate. Everyone who's involved is involved from the initiation to the implementation to the evaluation, and no one is reporting to anyone else. And so communication is created, move forward, understood, evaluated, and shared almost instantly. And you have so many people who can help you and you know how to go to them, but it's never up. It's always across and to other members of the team. I think that's a very different way to think about communication. And if you have any thoughts on that, please add to it, or otherwise let's do at least one more here.
Sure. Yeah. So I wanted to pick number five, I think, also. Okay. Leaders learn and have the flexibility to change their opinions. So this is a competency, leadership competency. But as our team has kind of grown in lockstep with the size of our projects, actually, our projects have kind of probably outstripped the size of our team, but that's okay. What's become increasingly more difficult is our ability for everyone to stay on the same page. Right. And I heard this a lot when I was in healthcare, when I was working with startups, trying to keep everyone on the same page. And I think this is a problem for basically every organization. But as one of the founders, people's previous work environments tell them that I'm supposed to have all the answers. Right. But as we've talked on the pod before, answers destroy people's agency. And what's crucial is to build a shared process of inquiry together to fundamentally understand the direction that the company is based on. And what's required of the system we're trying to contribute to in order to evolve it. So without foundational shared principles, people can scatter and take on irrelevant projects and end up going down rabbit holes of work with no connection to customers and constantly leaking motivation because nothing seems to be moving forward. And this is actually something that just showed up for us recently, where in one of our monthly development sessions, it was clear that there was a disparate amount of projects that we had coming in. But we didn't have anything to kind of organize and order that. So we ended up working together to develop principles. And now without fail on every single one of our sales calls, I'll hop off the call and my head of business development will say, so you think that one aligns with our principles? So it's the constant kind of working and reconsidering of these things that I think is so powerful. And I know this because I've been on the other side of it, where we took on a project that was completely misaligned with our principles before. And we came out of the other side feeling like we just spun our wheels for like 3 months with nothing to show for it. And yeah, the project launched, but we learned very little and transformed nothing in the industry. And if anything, it frayed the relationships between us and our partners.
That makes me tired.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, right. I'm sure it did you too. Well, I think the whole idea that we want our bosses to have an ability to shift their opinion is very strange. Like, opinion should not even be playing a role here. You're talking about at least trying to use values in your current system. There are, in a living system, there are a couple of things that are helpful here. That whole conversation in how it was that they organized was turning sideways to talk to people. And one of the person, I mean, by sideways, you're looking internal to the company, internal to your boss. I mean, guess you're looking up there, but in the sense that you're trying to figure, can we talk to each other so we get an agreed on opinion? That's not a very good business practice. And so I would not want leaders who had wanted to hear everyone's quote opinion and then think they're participating. What I want is people working with a shared framework and shared language about a development and growing and being connected to our external teams, like our natural parent, et cetera. And the framework that we have spent a little while since we put this out, but we work with living systems frameworks. You can't make these up. They're ones you learn to see. And so listen to this one and see if it in a way that helps you see the world. And these are ancient, by the way. Back to Pythagoras, I know the one I'm about to talk about, and into Socratic thinking and into our thinking. There's something called three lines of work, and they're nested concentric rings. And we want to all see ourselves connected to these and immersed in them, not trying to influence and persuade, but trying to be in service of the third ring, which is a line of work that's about making a difference for some specific stakeholder, customers, suppliers. It also will include Earth and communities. But the third line is what holds us all together. There's no sideways between me and somebody internally. There's all of us facing out into looking at what we're all trying to serve, like a vital and viable Earth, communities where people are able to grow and create equity and remove the impediments to equality. Also having healthy children, healthy families. And if that third line becomes what we use as a reference for how we reconcile, quote, opinions, now we have something to work with, because we're no longer working with my opinion, yours, and who's the influencer, who's in what role, and am I about to get in trouble? No, we're all on the same page for the third line of work we want to do. Then we all become what we call second line. So the middle ring becomes the second line, becomes who comes together now to serve that third line work. How do we develop ourselves to be better stewards, better collaborators, better co-creators out into the world? And then the inner ring we call first line of work. And that is the work we do on the development of ourselves as individuals to be able to see in terms of frameworks like this. It's a whole different way to think about doing business.
You know, Carol, I was thinking about this as I was writing, actually, earlier this morning, that this topic, to me, we keep coming back to these things, I think, in some ways. And I wanted to be transparent with people today because I feel like this is an ongoing struggle. Like, I notice myself falling into these things. So by no means are we pushing or trying to help people or telling people, admonishing people to be perfect, right? This is all an unfolding process. And so that's where I think these competencies get in the way, is they hold people as fixed in some ideal way. And the thing that I think we're trying to encourage people to realize is that this is a developmental process, like it is with all the folks in my company and the folks that Carol's worked with, that this is an unfolding process. But Carol, I'm wondering if you have any reflections for today.
Oh, I do. I really agree with that. I think the other thing is that these are all externally determined. They're ideals that someone has that are generic and standardized. And there's no development in that. There's an endpoint that you're judged against. It's all reference to how other people decide you should be and how other people are doing. What we are talking about in all of everything we've talked about for the 5 years we've done this podcast is moving to self-development, self-management. Sometimes we'll do the 9 self a self-determining characteristics. If we can't move that way, we are constantly keeping people trapped in someone else's evaluation box. And so the whole point is here, you can't even tune up your leadership like this suggests and have people be better. You have to throw all this stuff out and you have to restructure, redefine, but in no way make it functional where you flatten the organization and get rid of supervisors. We talked about last time the idea of moving much more toward the roles that are helper roles or resources. They're developmental people, for the teams who are out trying to do this work. So I hope people do keep sending us. It's amazing how many of you like what we did today. And I know that it's not completely finished because people keep sending the next question about this. So I've been in this work 47 years, and every day I get to work on me some more. Every day I wake up and I watch my mind go to these patterns that have been in our culture since my birth and long before. So hopefully you just come join our community and we all work on it together. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. And to that point, Carol, I think we have a couple of events coming up, right?
We do. Let's see. We have 2 summits. Let me talk about those and you can mention the others. August 12th, we're doing an open invitation to people to join us in a morning that's about regenerative partnering. Many of us work in co-founded organizations or marriages or life partners, somewhere where we're needing to figure out how in the world do you take all this work into that process. And so we're inviting people, if you're interested, send me where you can go to seed-communities.com and you'll find a tab on the seed-communities webpage where it says regenerative partnering. Secondly, and that can be for individuals, but bring a partner because a whole lot of it happens in breakouts. Secondly, we have business teams. We do an annual event of a disruptive subject. Last year, we looked at why is it we seem to be getting worse in terms of racism and difficulty with racists being able to communicate, and we try diversity and inclusion, and that seems to escalate the problem. We did that last year, and we can arrange for you to watch that if you like. There is a fee, but this year, we're going to look at the demise of democracy and how at risk we are and what role our epistemology, that is how we learn, how we try and create change, is undermining our ability to have democracy work. It escalates the forces. So come join us, and that one's November 15th, and that is on Carol Sanford Institute webpage. And you'll find under offerings the summit for 2022.
We also have a community for parents and couples, family pods organized around the same children, and community pods of multiple family pods on applying regenerative principles to familying and bringing communities and families together. You can find out more at seed-communities.com/parenting.
And finally, my latest book, Indirect Work, was on the number 1 bestseller list for the first 3 months it was out, and it is still on the bestseller list. It's no longer number one. But if you don't have a copy of that, please check out carolsanford.com under books, because there are many bonuses still available for buying one or more books that can help you take the intermezzos and the work in the book into a deeper workbook, and including a book club. So go check that out and help me keep it on the bestseller list at Amazon.
And remember again to keep sending us your Business Journal articles, as we appreciate them. This has been Business Second Opinion.